Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And pretty regularly, we are joined by Dr. John Duffy, who has joined us once again today. He's a clinical psychologist. He's written the book, The Available Parent. We hope to see a new book out of you pretty soon. That's coming along?
I'm hoping so. Yes, I'm working on it. I promise you.
All right. And also, check out his podcast, Undo Anxiety, really touching on many things in life that if it doesn't relate to you 100%, you still learn from it. So great job. With that.
Thank you so much.
John, there's a couple of topics that have come to light in recent times, and I know you wanted to discuss this, the stifling of creativity. Go into some detail on this.
Yeah, you know, my wife Julie and I sat down to record a podcast the other day, and we ended up talking about creativity and how little of it we actually use. Mm-hmm. So most of us are creatively talented in some way. And our kids are creatively talented in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think when we express ourselves creatively, we undo a lot of anxiety and depression and a lot of the things that hold us back when we decide, no, I've got to work more, or I should be out in the yard. I'm going to put that, or I'm really not that good a singer. I'm not that good a painter. I really can't dance. Once you decide what you can't do, then I think you limit yourself. And that is depressing, you know, because you feel like, oh, that whole creative part of my life is over. And sometimes I think, boy, if you would just tap your creativity, you probably don't need me. You probably don't need the medication you're on. You know, a lot of things could be undone if you just allowed yourself to be creative,
Don't you find that it's okay for children to have all kinds of creative outlets, but as an adult, it's like, oh, you're a grown-up now. You can't
act like one.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the societal norm for sure, is like, you know, let's let our kids try different things. Although a lot of us are still hung up on, like, is she going to be good at that, or is it going to be embarrassing? Will she be a good singer? You know, but even more so as adults, I think we're very reluctant to try something new that's creative. I picked up the guitar about 10 years ago, and I remember how reluctant I was myself just to, like, play that thing one time in public. You know, it was harrowing,
Right.
So, I think that, you know, the more we do it, the better off we are. But I think you're right. We have this kind of cultural reluctance to do that because there's other important business to be done, with air quotes around it.
I don't know why I always think of John Mahoney from Frasier, but didn't he start acting when he was older?
In his 40s, I think. Late 30s or early 40s.
So, and he did pretty well for himself. And it's like, you know, I have a drum kit that's unused in our basement, and I'm thinking, I want to take drum lessons. Half of me says, why? But the other half of me says, I took two lessons. It's kind of fun. Why not?
Right. Why not? I was an accountant when I was younger, and on a whim, I took classes at Second City, improv classes, and I kind of found my next calling through those classes. So sometimes you don't know where this creative venture is going to lead, and it may not lead to the main stage at Second City, but it might lead to becoming a therapist or changing careers somehow, you know? But if you don't allow yourself to kind of broaden your thinking, and that's what I think creativity does. It kind of opens our minds a little bit.
Yeah.
Then I think we get stuck in this kind of narrow focus, this little lens.
Do you think that this explains the boom in adult coloring books? Because all of a sudden, if you go into a bookstore, there's 80 or 100 adult coloring books. That never used to happen, but now people need that outlet, don't they?
I so think that that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Adult coloring books and these places that have like a come drink wine and paint a vase.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
love that.
Right? And people love that.
Yeah.
People, like, you know, you see on Facebook, people holding up their pictures and they're proud. I think people are amazed at what they can create and forget that they're creative at all.
Right.
You know,
last
so it's really
night,
cool.
I went with three of my girlfriends, four of us went to this cooking class. And it was a blast. It was bring your own alcohol. They had water and they gave you the items to cook. We made homemade meatballs. We made gnocchi with pesto sauce. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the other part of it is, to your point, Bill, like as adults, we don't have fun like that much anymore.
We
right.
Don't.
So we'll go to a party and we'll stand around and we'll drink. You know what I mean? Or something like that, or eat. But we don't create. And sometimes when you get together and you create things, Wendy and I have both been involved in an open mic night in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
There's an extra element of like joy to that. And, you know, and kind of a revelation. You get somebody coming up to you telling you like, wow, that was really impressive. And you think like, okay, maybe I've got something.
Right.
You know? And maybe not, you haven't got something enough to go professional, but something enough to enjoy yourself doing it. Because if you're self-conscious, you're not going to enjoy yourself.
Exactly. And you'll open up a hobby, right? So, you know, you'll release some of your stress and anxiety in that way, right? I'll spend some time on the weekend just playing music or painting or, you know, or dancing or doing whatever the thing is that I kind of thought I wanted to do my whole life, but I thought, that's not me. I'm not a painter. I'm not artistic like that. And
so for people who feel a deficiency, what's their first move? Just pick a thing or two that you've always wanted to try and finally get through and try it?
Yeah. You know, I think I was thinking about this very thing, and I was thinking, like, how do I coach somebody through this?
Yeah.
And part of it is don't rely on a lot of coaching. Don't overthink it. Yeah. Just go and do it. You know what I mean? So, you know, if you're inclined to paint, get an easel, get a canvas, and just give it a shot. You know what I mean? And, you know, or pick up a guitar and try it. Sign up for that dance class. Sign up for that acting class. Try something.
Right.
And
never too late, is it?
Never, ever too late. Ever. I mean, I love your John Mahoney story.
Yeah.
It suggests that very clearly.
Yeah. Dr. John Duffy is his name. If you have a question or a comment, you know how to reach us, right? We're 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a minute or two. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Clinical psychologist, best-selling author, certified life coach, wonderful guy, Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us. What's the next topic we want to cover? I know we were talking about this off the air a little bit.
I want to go off book for just a little bit and talk about something that Wendy and I were discussing yesterday. And here's what it is. Every once in a while, a story comes down the line about a teacher, a female teacher, that has had an affair with one of their students.
Yes.
All right. I want to talk about the psychology of that, because they have to know how wrong it is to be in a position of power, to be an older person and taking advantage of a younger person. But then the side note to this is we've all noticed that for some reason, these women aren't desperate the way you would think they'd be. They don't look desperate. They aren't desperate. They're
You're saying they're attractive.
Young,
so
attractive women.
They wouldn't have trouble finding a date.
Right, right.
So what's going on there behind the scenes that we can't figure out?
The argument I hear most frequently that resonates most is there's something regressive about their personalities. So there's something unfulfilled about those years of their lives.
Oh.
And so they're kind of going back in time for themselves.
Yeah.
Because I get your point. It feels like, well, these women seem like they have options that are far more appropriate and legal and won't get them in the kind of hot water that they get into so regularly. So yeah, the argument is that there is kind of this psychology playing out in their mind where their own teenage years weren't as fulfilling in relational ways as they would have hoped. And so they regress back and, you know, look to fulfill, kind of relive those years directly.
It's amazing to me because you think about all they have at stake. Many times they already have a family of their own, and they certainly have their career.
Yeah.
And to risk all that, it almost doesn't make sense, and yet they keep doing it.
Well, you know, another thing that I'll throw in here is I work with an awful lot of people who can achieve great success and feel like, I don't know if I deserve this, and they will find a way to sabotage their lives. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a voice in their head, whether it's a parent from 20 years ago or somebody from yesterday, that says, you know, who do you think you are, you know, to achieve the success? Why do you think you're worth it? And so they play that out. And that's where the sabotage comes from. But it's a really curious phenomenon. You're right, because it seems so wildly unnecessary.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
John, do you look at this as there's some parallel? I'll use Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes was the guy who headed up Fox News and was a very wealthy man and a very powerful man. But then allegations came out from several different women, and I'm sure he's not the only person, but he's the first one that came to mind. Bill O'Reilly is another one all of a sudden.
Who was just let go from Fox.
Yeah. So, again, I always say to myself, don't they consider the balance of what they're doing and what the long-term effect would be, losing your career, losing all your money? A rational person would say it's not worth it, and yet it happens all the time for some reason.
A rational person absolutely would. I think when you achieve a certain degree of power and notoriety and you surround yourself with people who support that, you forget how fallible you are. You forget that, you know, your mistakes can have ramifications beyond just you, and you presume that you have the
like
luxury.
Like you're untouchable, kind
you're
of?
You're untouchable, right? So, that you know, like it's reminiscent to me of the Billy Bush tape with Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, that to me had this era of, you know, well, if you're a famous guy, if you're a star, you can do whatever you want, you know? And I think there is that vibe out there that, you know, Ailes in particular, in this position of enormous power over
right.
a number of attractive women who were working for him.
Right.
And it seems like he felt very much at liberty to abuse that, and he felt like he held sway over them because,
yeah.
well, I'm your boss. I can fire you today, you know?
Well, let's throw Bill Cosby into the discussion as well, because at that time, Bill Cosby was, for a long time, America's best TV dad.
Yeah.
He's a guy that all the country, if not the world, just loved and respected. So that guy was able to fool us.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know?
Amazing. And, you know, when I think about Bill Cosby, I suspect, and again, this is just a suspicion, that there's a deeper layer there of self-loathing because,
yeah.
you know, like, because it's so darkly criminal, the things that he admitted to doing, you know, that I can't imagine that he feels good about himself on any level and probably knew every moment of the way that he was perpetuating a fraud. So he's another, to my thinking, another self-sabotager in the grandest fashion, you
right.
know?
And you hear a lot of people like that, and we know a couple that they do stand in their own way of success.
Yeah.
Things start going really well, and, you know, they do something to mess it up.
Right, right. Happens all the time. I mean, Cosby is almost a jaw-dropping example, right?
Like
because he seemed like he had created this image that seemed so squeaky clean, and the things he did were the polar opposite, you know? So he really ruined his reputation forever.
He would overcompensate, you know, he went out of his way to explain to, like, rap artists that they're not representing the black community very well in the way they dress and the way they speak. And he would try so hard to give a good example, but then we find out what was going on behind the scenes. It's just, it's amazing.
Yeah, there's a certain type of pathology. I think when you get kind of narcissistic enough and you believe what's written about you enough, you think you're kind of above the law, and you kind of separate these parts of yourself. You know what I mean? You can compartmentalize in your mind this kind of, oh, I'm committing these crimes against women, but, you know, I should tell these kids to stay in school.
Yeah.
And I get to be self-righteous about that because I'm America's father. You
yeah.
know? Yeah.
And he was so against kids not having a father figure. And
oh,
when
yeah.
we got to meet him backstage, which was such a thrill before this all broke,
yeah.
I had brought my son Dylan. Jim had to work. It was our anniversary. And I introduced Bill Cosby to my son Dylan. And the first thing out of Cosby's mouth was, where's Dylan's dad?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, his dad's also my husband. It's actually our anniversary. And I was like,
right.
didn't know what to say because I was shocked.
But he wanted to see the nuclear family together and functioning as a union.
Right.
And it's so strange.
It is.
Then you find out what was really going on and you go, why do you care about that when you're having so much problems?
Right,
your
right,
own?
Right. And it's hard to reconcile that those two things, this pathology and this self-righteousness, can exist in the same lens,
yeah.
in the same mind at the same time. And yet this happens in a lot of people, not to the extent that we see in Bill Cosby, because not everybody's as well known.
Yeah.
But a lot of people play this out where they'll, you know, do something kind of reprehensible on the one hand and feel like, well, the good I do kind of balances that out, you know, or overbalances that out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cosby did go on to tell Dylan, you know, since it's your parents' anniversary, maybe when you get home, you could go play some video games or something so mom and dad could have a little time together. So on the way home, Dylan's like, are you and dad going to do it?
Oh.
I'm like, none of your business. And he goes, well, Bill Cosby said you should. It was a weird turnaround, though.
It's an odd
like,
moment.
Like, where's
yes.
your father?
Right.
And then
yes.
Dylan, go get lost and have some Jell-O pudding.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it
kinda
seems
weird.
Like he was kind of losing
yeah.
his message somewhere in there. Yeah.
Without a doubt. John, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. It's Dr. John Duffy. If people want to hear your podcast, and they should, their best bet is to do what?
Yeah, it is here on WGN Plus. It's on iTunes. It's called Undo Anxiety, and I hope you give it a listen.
Good. Thanks so much, John.
Thanks, guys.
A quick break.